Welcome to Tech San Diego Spotlight Podcast, where we look at all things technology. Lots of things going on. Coming to you live from technology's perfect climate. Lovely, beautiful San Diego, and it sure has been living up to expectations the past few days. We have a special guest today, but you've heard her before if you're a regular listener to our podcast, Corinne Wenger from Fragment. Corinne, say hello.
Hello. Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Are you enjoying yourself in technology's perfect climate?
I sure am. Well, we moved to our Sereno Valley location in the spring, so we're getting close to our one-year mark, and it's been fantastic.
Well, that's great to hear. I was thinking about you lately, Corinne. I was reading the newspapers, and I, you know, was reading about, especially from these larger companies, this, you know, some of these layoffs and everything. And it struck me, you know, how are, you know, the larger companies are the larger holders of H-1B visas. So it struck me that I should get you on a podcast. Get your thoughts on that. Pick your brain a little bit. Find out what's going on. I have a theory about H-1B visas that may be good for small, medium-sized companies that I want to go over later. But just as kind of laying the foundation about, you know, people who are laid off, what do they do? What are their options? And, you know, this is a fun podcast for me because I don't have to talk a lot because I'm not a domain expert. So I just turn it over to you and let it go. So tell us what you're seeing in the marketplace, maybe what the options are if you've recently been unemployed and what you guys are seeing in immigration.
Yeah, sure. I mean, certainly the tech sector has had its share of layoffs since the beginning of last year. I think it's some over 220,000 jobs. So it's certainly quite significant. I don't think we've seen this kind of layoff activity in a while. And, you know, layoffs are quite stressful, right? Normally for anyone. But for those on visas, it provides an extra layer of stress, right? Your immigration status in the U.S. is dependent on your employment. You've got potentially, you know, dependents with you, kids going to school. And so for those who were terminated due to layoffs, they've got to act pretty quickly. And depending on the type of visa that they're on, they may not have too many options. Luckily, there was a change in the regulations a few years back, which does allow now for a proper grace period. Before, it was just kind of this, we'll make the argument that, you know, it's not reasonable for somebody to file a new petition you know, before you get terminated, right? You don't get advance notice. And so this kind of provides a little bit more of, you know, of some wiggle room, if you will, a grace period for folks to find a new employer and for that new employer to file a change of employer petition. But it's 60 days, as long as we're still within the original authorized period of stay.
But they just don't transfer, right? I mean, you have to, let's say you have an H-1B visa and your employer lets you off and then you find another one. That H-1B visa doesn't just transfer over. Is it, do you have to start the process over? How does that work?
Right. So the petition that was approved for employer A, you can't just take that over and present it to employer B and begin employment. Employer B does have to file a petition. There's a bit of relaxation as to when you can start work upon the filing of the petition. Generally, for like those on H-1B, for example, you wouldn't have to wait for the petition to actually be approved. You could start upon the filing of that petition, which is helpful. And then, of course, other considerations are, you know, the dependent spouse, certain dependent visas allow for work incident to status. So an H-4 dependent spouse could be working, and that status is only valid if the principal spouse maintains H-1B. So the impact is not only to the principal employee on H-1B, but potentially to the dependent spouse's ability to work as well.
Let's say I'm working for a large company and I just got notification. Are there a top three things or four things or two or one or what's the first things that you're going to have that conversation about their status and what are you advising them? What are the, you know, just really, here's the things you have to do. You should be thinking about in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Right. No, great question. And one, it's act quickly. So the minute you find out that you're let go, I would consult with an attorney to explore options. That 60-day period is going to go pretty quickly. Now, some folks may not have a 60-day period available to them, right? Let's say somebody came here on an L1 visa. That's the visa that is available for multinational companies where you worked abroad for one of the entities and you were transferred to a U.S. parent or subsidiary company. Well, that L visa is really valid only within to work for entities within those qualifying companies. And so you can't just take that over to another employer that's not part of the multinational group. So acting quickly to understand what the options are. Looking at the spouse, right? Perhaps the spouse is on their own non-immigrant visa, so maybe they have their H-1B that the laid off employee could potentially switch over to H-4, and again, that now allows work authorization incident to status, so that could be an option. Some changing to another status. Sometimes you're running out of time on those 60 days. Do you switch over to a visitor visa to buy some time to wrap up your affairs, even if that's just it? If we look back at the 2008 recession, not to say that that's where we're at now, but certainly we did see folks go back to school and, change their status to the student visa, the F1 visa, to get a second master's or perhaps start a PhD program. So that could be an option for folks who don't want to depart the U.S. The challenge oftentimes with these change of status applications, though, is they take a long time to be approved. So until that student application is approved, they can't start school. Now, there is some relief on the horizon. USCIS has announced that it will roll out its final phase of premium processing expansion. That's when folks can basically, pay a higher fee to get the application processed a lot faster. And we expect that around June timeframe, this will be extended to the student change of status. So that would be a game changer for those folks because that would allow for the F1 to be approved perhaps before, the fall semester begins.
Well, that sounds good. You wish there was probably another conversation, but you wish there was some way. You talked about a relaxation for those people that were let off. If this is a meritocracy-driven immigration system, you wish there was a way for the H-1B visa to travel with the credentialed high-tech worker, right? But, in the wisdom of our government, I guess. So you talked about students a little bit. You talked about But let's go back to the I want to talk about students, but I want to talk about them in a different way. So on the H-1B visa, so I alluded to this at the beginning of my introduction. So the bigger the company, oftentimes you see the more apt they are to bring in H-1B visas. They have an infrastructure in place. They, it's a little bit more burdensome. They have the abilities to bring in a counsel. You and I have been talking about that's a fallacy that, in fact, you could bring in a fragment or someone and you're going to have the same type of resources that a big Fortune 500 company has. And I get that. I understand that. But it would seem like these big companies, if they're shedding people, they're not going to be grabbing as many H-1B visas. So my question to you is this an opportunity for smaller mid-sized companies that maybe have not thought about it in the past to come in, scoop some of these people up? Is there a list of the H-1B visa people that have been let go anywhere? Or, what would you advise a smaller mid-sized company? Are there any opportunities to pick up some talent?
Yeah, from the picking up the talent, certainly, if you have folks who were on an H-1B that were subject to a layoff, then the small, medium-sized company that perhaps didn't go through the H-1B lottery process that happens every March, April timeframe, they would be able to pick up that talent and file an H-1B change of employer that would not be subject to the cap because that employee's already been counted, if you will, against the cap. What will be interesting, though, is to see what impact these layoffs have had what impact these layoffs will have on the upcoming H-1B lottery, right? To your point, big tech certainly is the largest consumer of H-1B visas, and so they submit a high volume of cases for registration, which then go through the lottery process. So, you know, will they be submitting fewer registration requests in light of their layoffs? That if that's the case, then it could allow perhaps small to medium-sized companies an opportunity to grab a bigger piece of the pie, right? So only time will tell. Obviously, we'll have to see. It really depends on, you know, what drove the layoffs in the first place, right? There's a lot of opinions out there as to, was it that we overhired, right, during the pandemic? Are there redundancies, perhaps? Is it just an opportunity to perhaps streamline and run the business more efficiently? And then you balance it out with, you know, we're still seeing some talent shortage and skill set in the semiconductor space, for example, right? So, you know, maybe we should regroup in April and have a follow-up and debrief on that once the registration has closed and the lottery.
I think I know the answer to this. I think it would be a probably an invasion of privacy, but there are no lists of those people that have been laid off from that have an H-1B visa, right, that you're familiar with?
No, I mean, companies who have large layoffs, you know, do have to publish a notice, you know, under WARN. So, but I mean, I think the media has certainly covered the companies who've had large layoffs. I presumably you could cross-check that against perhaps the, you know, USCIS data on H-1B and the high filers of H-1Bs, you know, if you really wanted to.
Yeah, it seems like that might be an interesting exercise. So let's talk. You talked about some of these may be able to, one option may be going back to school, right? Which is an interesting option. The podcast, you know, Tech San Diego has a university talent initiative where we're trying to get more students to stay in the region. And, you know, we look at foreign students and we think that's great, right? It makes ties to other countries. The challenge is always getting them to stay here, right? No one wants to hire someone for a year and then see them leave. And so since we have a lot of listeners that are also students through our Tech San Diego activities, are you seeing any changes or anything that you think that students may want to be aware about in immigration or maybe something that's existing that they're not often looking at?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think often perhaps an area that's overlooked by students as far as, okay, what outside of being sponsored, right, by an employer, what are my options? And there's two real key programs that I just want to mention, particularly for those in STEM fields, you know, high performers, let's say. There's the National Interest Waiver Green Card Path. This is an area where you can self-petition, so you don't need an employer. It has to be in an area where that's of national interest to the U.S. I think in if we look at the semiconductor field, for example, with Biden's CHIPS Act that he passed, it's a perfect example of why that would be in the national interest. And the benefit there is this is a green card path. You can file the green card on your own and then also file the ancillary adjustment of status to permanent residency, which ultimately gets you the green card. You can file that concurrently, and that comes with it a work permit. Now, processing times do take a while, unfortunately, but if a student were to time this properly, they could potentially get that work permit in time before their STEM OPT expires, for example. So that's one option that I think is worth exploring for students and perhaps is a bit underutilized. And it's not limited to folks with PhDs, right? An advanced degree, so master's degree, or even those with bachelor's degrees with maybe 5 years of experience or more could qualify. The other one that is of particular importance is the EB-5 investor visa green card, used to be named the $1 million visa green card. The program was just recently recertified last year, and while the minimum investment amount that's required increased from $500,000 to $800,000, the program allows for concurrent filing as well of that adjustment of status application. Before, you'd have to first get that the green card petition approved, and then you could file, which would take years. But this is a huge benefit, and certainly we're seeing an increase in this demand by students, actually, because they're that, you know, first generation in the U.S. who come from wealthy families, who want to invest in a program. And it's passive investment. So it's not like you've got to set up your own business, operate the business. It's a passive investment that you sign up with what's called a regional center and a project, and it gets you the green card. And so this could also be a viable option for those either impacted by layoffs, right? They may have stock options and, you know, other funds that are available to invest. Or for F1 students who may be uncertain about the prospects of either obtaining that H-1B during the lottery or because of the layoffs in the various sectors.
Kareen, we've always, most of our phone calls and conversations are around kind of corporate immigration, right? Do you guys, I guess I have to ask this since we're talking about it, do you help? And you're right. I mean, there are a lot of wealthy students, especially here in San Diego and some of the schools that are sending them there, and they could use the expertise. Do you have a practice that would, if they came knocking on your doors, is it something that you guys take care of?
Absolutely. Yeah, we have a dedicated team on EB-5s. We have a dedicated team on national interest waivers, which, you know, whether they're sponsored by an employer or self-petitioning. So yeah, we handle the whole gamut for sure.
And I've also spoke to you enough times that I was going to tell you the advice that you would give them, but I already know what that advice is going to be. Early. The earlier you start thinking about it, and the earlier you register, the earlier you get into paperwork, the better. Would that be the correct Kareen statement on advice for anything immigration?
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, processing times at across all government agencies that touch immigration are just increasing. The pandemic really did a number on the staffing, and the agencies just have not ramped back up. And so things are taking a lot longer. And, we're seeing USCIS again try to bridge the gap a little bit, offer premium processing and expand it, but that's going to take a while. So earlier the better, especially for folks who were let go. It's important for them to understand what their current status is so that they don't run in jeopardy of running out of status and falling out of status that then impacts their ability down the line to come back to the U.S. So, yeah, early planning is key.
Yeah, I think that tech people in general, will want to do it themselves, right? They're smart people. They're college educated. Let's just get on the internet and go to town. And, I've been, working with HR people and talent acquisition for a long time. And my advice is really seek some good professional guidance on this because, there are things that you think you know that you don't know. And there's shortcuts and there's a whole bureaucracy in immigration that's going to be tough to discover just by doing a Google search and how do I stay in the U.S. after I've been fired. So whether that's the fine folks at Fraggleman or someone else, seek some professional guidance on this. I think in the long term, it's really going to pay off. So Kareen, we've talked about if you get fired and your H-1B visa, some of those options. We've talked about some of the students. Is there anything else that's kind of on the horizon that's pressing that we haven't touched on that we should be looking out for?
I think it's worth mentioning the impact that layoffs have on those employees who remain employed and those who are on visas going through the green card process. Because those that are going through the green card process often go through what's called the labor certification green card path, which requires a labor market test by the employers. And they need to attest that they have not had a layoff of U.S. workers for that particular position or related position in the 6 months prior to filing the application. So, you know, timing will be important there as well, that if their position was impacted by a layoff, then it's going to push out the green card application for them. Are they running out of time on their underlying visa? And so a careful assessment of where they are on their current employment visa, how much time will they have? Will they have enough time to go through this process, and then exploring alternatives like we talked about, right? Would a national interest waiver application be fruitful? And the waiver part is waiving that labor market test. So there could be other options, alternatives, but again, to your earlier point, it's important to plan early, assess frequently of the situation so that they're aware of, you know, the impact that these layoffs may have had to their current visa situation.
Thank you. I was thinking about you and the way the layoffs affect what's going on. I think you've given a good outline of how that affects current employers and what they maybe do. Again, if you're a small mid-sized company and you've been thinking of bringing over foreign talent, now's really a good time to think about that, you know, and you might find one of these H-1B V holders that are transitioning, need to transition to a new company, or just maybe someone new. But again, it's, you know, I want to do as much as we can to get smaller and mid-sized companies. Love the big tech companies, but, you know, H-1B visas should be available to anyone who needs to bring skilled labor that they can't find in the United States. Certainly, if you could find that labor in the U.S., hire it. We're all for that. We're not suggesting that we bring over foreign workers just for the sake of bringing over foreign workers, who, by the way, need to make just as much. If you think you're going to be bringing them over to pay them less, you're in for a rude awakening. I know there's market tests and other things. It's about the talent and about the capabilities and the inability to find these niche workers that you may find overseas to be able to bring them in. But for small, medium-sized companies, it may not be as burdensome as you think. There are lots of resources out there. I always turn to Fragerman for my when I refer people into immigration issues. But there's certainly lots of firms out there like Fragerman. But of course, there's only one Kareen. So Kareen, thank you for taking time out of your beautiful Friday. And we will indeed bring you back on in the near future.
My pleasure. Thanks again for having me, and always happy to join in on a conversation.
And we'll be seeing your new digs. I know we're going to have the Tech San Diego's HR Roundtable in your offices pretty soon, so I will get to see them for the first time.
Fantastic. Looking forward to having you guys.
Okay. Thanks, Kareen. And this is going to end this episode of Tech San Diego Spotlight. We will have in the liner notes, if you want to get a hold of Fragerman or Kareen or any other relevant information that we'll put in there, we will put in the notes for the video. Stay subscribed, and we'll see you at the next Tech San Diego Spotlight. Thank you.
This episode of TSD Spotlight was hosted by Tech San Diego Executive Director Kevin Carroll. Big thanks to Kareen Wenger, partner at Fragerman, for joining us. Fragerman is a leading firm dedicated exclusively to immigration services worldwide. Founded in 1951, Fragerman represents a broad range of companies, organizations, and individuals to help facilitate the transfer of employees worldwide. We provide immigration support in more than 170 countries. All services are designed to improve your speed to ground and help you mobilize your employee population so you can remain a cutting-edge player in your industry and competitive wherever you operate. Find out more at www.fragomen.com. That's FRAGOMEN.com. Producers for Tech San Diego Spotlight are Kevin Carroll and Sarah Spiva. TSD Spotlight is recorded remotely and edited by Hypable Impact. If you enjoyed this podcast, make sure to like, follow, and share.